morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. This morning, Mike Cosentino.
Good morning, good morning. I'm here.
And Steve Williamson here. We'll be talking about a new kind of tax. People love to talk about taxes, don't they, Mike?
Well, you know, I like talking about them. Doing them is a little different story.
And it's got a lot of different names. It's called the Robin Hood tax.
I kind of like that one.
What is that metaphor there, Mike?
We'll talk about the Robin Hood tax.
It's called more seriously, I guess, among people involved in economics as the financial transaction tax or the financial speculation tax. When you call it a financial speculation tax, it tends to to raise tax money based on taxing financial transactions, particularly high speed transactions. The stock market has changed a lot in recent years, and so at one time a small investor had a pretty good shot at it. Now a lot of the money is made in, you know, microsecond financial changes, tiny little swifts. If you don't have the world's quickest computer, it's pretty hard to get in on that part of the money. So one of the tax is aimed at two things, raising a whole lot of tax money.
Well, it seems to do that. Yeah, that seems to do that without even trying.
Well, we're still learning about this, folks, but there's a study, and what it says, and it's, let me just read it off. The Buffett rule would raise $39 billion in the next 9 years. Getting rid of the carried interest loophole, $13 billion. The Obama bank tax, which I don't know how that's standing now, $61 billion. Cutting oil and gas subsidies, $28 billion. The financial transaction tax would raise $352 billion in the U.S. alone over a nine-year period. So,
what got me excited about this is the National Nurses Network, what I consider to be the most effective organized union in the United States is in favor of this. And one of the reasons they're in favor of it, when this, and we're going to talk, this tax this has a lot of history.
So this has a popular support in the United States and by different NGOs, nonprofit groups in Europe, and they've been leading the charge in terms of public sector talk about this. But it also has support from a lot of economists and business people.
1,000 economists support this. 21 countries in Europe support this. A lot of countries already have this. We're going to talk about that in a minute.
There's Warren Buffett supports it.
Bill Gates supports this.
So it's not quite as out there as you might
think. Paul Krugman, you know, I mean, we can name all 1,000 economists. But just to be clear, a financial transaction tax, a monetary tax for a particular purpose. The concept has been most commonly associated with the financial sector. And this isn't necessarily a consumption tax, which is kind of different.
It's not a tax that'll affect ordinary people much, at least if it's well done. Now, one of the things we want to talk about, folks, is the impact of having one country do it, impact of having multiple countries doing it, and having in a broader thing where it would be sort of universal, and you wouldn't be able to get away from it one way or the other.
Well, that's it. You hear finance ministers now talking about it, and certainly Canadian, even American guys like Geithner. But Canadian finance ministers, other countries are saying, you know, if it's global, no problem. You know, we're willing to discuss it, but they're unwilling to give up any possible trading action because somebody will go to another country.
A lot of the real fortunes and stuff are being made in the financial sector. And that's fine, but this would begin to be able to tax the financial sector some. The thing is that the financial sector is the strongest part of the economy right now. This is a tiny little tax. They're talking about 0.5%, but when you multiply it by thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of times, it ends up being a lot of money. And it taxes people who can and institutions that can afford to pay it. It doesn't tax consumers. You're liable not to be affected by it, and it raises as we mentioned earlier, a tremendous amount of money, and there's interest in it worldwide, right, Mike?
There is, and it's interesting to note that every financial transaction tax, which is what we're talking about this morning, kind of has its own specific intended purpose. In France, where it's just been implemented in August, and where they're working on it now, working out the kinks, it was kind of aimed at speculators. That was the intent.
That's why it's sometimes called the financial speculators tax.
And it would easily, by the way, one of the critics' comments are that, well, it'll impact old ladies, it'll impact pension funds. Well, you can exempt pension funds, and you can exempt average investors. You can exempt healthcare savings plans, and that's almost a given. In fact, the one House bill that was introduced in 2004 by, Fatah, F-A-T-T-A, congressman.
I think it was Representative Keith Ellison. Michigan, I believe he's from. Yeah.
Well, like I said, there's been 20 of them introduced in the House and 4 in the Senate. So, and that's one part of the research.
And what I thought was interesting in doing some research, and I'm new to this, is that between 1914 and 1966, the U.S. levied a 0.02% tax on all stock transfers. In 1932, they doubled it in order to help pay for the actions trying to get us out of the Great Depression. The taxes are posed on financial markets. And what does it say, Mike? At least 29 countries, including Australia, Hong Kong, Switzerland, and the UK, currently have some form of financial speculation tax. So it starts out with a pretty solid base.
Well, yeah, Keynes, the famous John Maynard Keynes, envisioned a financial transaction tax in 1936. But what I was saying is, in the American version so far, the pensions and health savings plans have been exempted.
So you're saying that health savings plans and pensions could do high-speed trading, they wouldn't be taxed on
it? That's right.
But that other institutions using high speed trading would be taxed. See, the more transactions you do, folks, the greater the tax revenue that's taken from you. And so, if you do thousands of little tax transactions a second or every minute, then it'll affect you, but it won't affect someone doing buy and hold stock trading. You buy a stock, you keep it for a couple of years, 0.5%. You probably won't even notice it, especially at the level most people were able to buy stocks these days, which is not great.
Well, then let's talk about for a second, you know, we're talking about not just stocks. Not surprisingly, the American version, as it's been floated, it's being kicked around Washington and elsewhere, has half a dozen little variations. There's a chart. And so securities is one source. Bonds, obviously, is another. You could just limit it to bonds. You could limit it to just default swaps, which I kind of like. In fact, a quarter cent transaction tax on simply default swaps would raise about $17 billion a year. But it is true that half cent, is what the chart that I've seen, on securities, on stocks, would raise anywhere between $117 billion and $204 billion a year. And these numbers become... But anyway, you can target certain sectors or certain trades. You could just do currency trades, as some countries want to do.
Yeah, it starts out, I mean, the modern push for it starts out with doing currency trade, because there's this tremendous amount of currency speculation going on, which is pretty damaging to most countries. The United States is in a good position because we have our own currency, and so we have a lot of control over what happens. But in the European Union, where everybody is using the same currency, it's really, really hard to maintain your control of your economy when you're don't have in control of your currency. So one reason, for example, they say Iceland has done a lot better than a lot of the other countries because Iceland had its own currency, and even though it did worse in terms of getting hit by the Great Recession and their banks collapsed and everything else, they've recovered because they have control over the evaluation of their currency. So the thing is about it, folks, is that it's not strictly speaking, a moral tale. In other words, there's advantages to being able to lower the value of your currency, advantages to being able to raise it. What I'm seeing, Mike, is that the European Union's very interested in this, but the United States wasn't at that last big meeting, and that kind of put a damper on it.
At the G20, yeah, that was, the chancellor, Germany is very interested, the finance minister and the prime minister are very interested in this, Merkel, and want to do it tomorrow. But getting back to the United States, the proposals so far in the House have been between a quarter of a cent and a half a cent on either or everything. You can do it on securities. You can do it on bonds. You can do it on derivatives.
One thing it wouldn't do, Mike, let's underline this for folks. One thing that it wouldn't do is tax regular bank transactions. I mean, putting your money in and out of the bank. Nobody's proposing that. It's not about that. It's about fees for Wall Street trades of different kinds, right?
And the funds have been earmarked, at least, like I say, in the American plans, for health, public services, debt reduction, infrastructure, and job creation. And just like Arizona's recent attempt at an education tax, American lawmakers want to target where the money goes and believe that that's an excellent way, which I think it is, of getting more support for it.
So the Obama's proposals, president's proposals to raise taxes a bit on the very, very wealthy raises money, raises needed tax money, but it doesn't really solve the problem. We need a stream of money coming in that'll allow us to maintain all our infrastructure and to increase our spending on education, which is an area that we're beginning to fade a little bit in, right, Mike?
If you read Bloomberg, that one of the problems with it is that it doesn't address one of the biggest problems, and is breaking up the big banks. In other words, maybe it will take a little bit of the casino aspect of Wall Street out. I want to mention that Pete DeFazio, Democrat from Oregon, Senator Harkins, these were the Senate bills. I said there were four introduced in the Senate. The name of theirs was Let Wall Street Pay for Restoration of Main Street. It was kind of a real popular title. This it got some traction in the Senate. So we might see some, especially with some of the new senators that we have, as they get to know that these things were these sorts of things are out there being discussed, it may get some more support. Tom Harkins, Democrat from Iowa, and Bernie Sanders have all introduced bills in the Senate to get this thing going. It's a really widespread popular idea, and it's not a regressive tax. I believe it's considered a more progressive because it's.
The more of these transactions you make.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not talking about putting money in and out of the bank or
we're not talking about a stinking sales tax.
Yeah. It's not that. It's a tax on massive amounts of trading done. And it's a little tiny tax. And it works because it's taxing so many trading. Now, one of the things that the people who fairly recently introduced it, and the reason they call it the financial speculation tax, or financial speculators tax, is it was supposed to reduce, you know, financial speculation and gambling on Wall Street. It was because it raises the cost of doing it. Right now, you can basically do it pretty much for nothing. But the idea was if you raise the cost for speculation, there'll be less speculation, and it's this vast amount of speculation that got us into this, the Great Recession. So it has some positive benefits besides raising funds, right, Mike?
Yeah, it has all kinds of, like I say, it does, I guess, impact the financial sector a little more strongly than others.
So, Mike, what's the big objection to it? What's the big objection to this tax?
That's a good question. It would be passed on to consumers. I mean, they're afraid that it's not going to impact the speculators or the default, the options traders, as much as eventually it's going to be passed on to, I put my trade in on Schwab this morning for $8.95, and it's going to, my cost at Schwab will go up to $9.50, perhaps. I don't see that necessarily as a bad thing, but
another
others do. It would discourage investors.
What's to keep, since the markets are so fluid? We talked to Jamie Galbraith, and he's endorsed the idea, but his problem with it is what's going to keep me, since the whole world is now electronic, it's a virtual world, really, folks out there. What's to keep me from moving my transactions to a country that doesn't have them from a country that does have them? In other words, the U.S. has this tiny little tax, but I don't even want to pay it. Why can't I move my money to Switzerland and do my trades over there?
Let me read the list of supporting countries so far. This is in 2012. I'm going to read them in alphabetical order. Argentina, Austria, Belgium, Brazil, Cuba, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Ireland, Italy, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Portugal, South Africa. These are the supporting. Spain and of course good old Venezuela, which isn't a surprise. But the idea is that, like we said, over 1,000 economists, Paul Krugman, Jeffrey Sachs, and a bunch of others. Archbishop Canterbury supports this. Michael Moore supports this.
The Vatican supports it.
The Vatican supports this.
So this is an original, different idea. You folks want to know a different way to raise taxes, some new ideas. This is actually an old idea that keeps coming back.
We're looking for a way to raise revenue, regardless of what that might be. And obviously taxes is a sort of a major form of revenue enhancement.
And this is the most painless way I see to get the kinds of money that the government needs to do things right.
China is against it because they say it'll add a burden to on their domestic banks. But I think they're talking about a bank transaction tax. I think in a lot of ways, as we're finding out here this morning, a lot of people don't understand this. That as soon as you hear financial transaction tax, everybody thinks of whatever they're most familiar with as far as financial transactions go.
And I think the point that Mike made earlier that there are lots of different versions of this. So this, folks, frankly, is an unsettled exactly how you would do it. So there are different House bills in the United States. There are different proposals in Europe. Getting lots and lots of the major countries to agree to it is a difficulty, right, Mike?
Yeah. Well, it's a Great Britain, the government supports financial transaction tax only if implemented worldwide. The Bank of England strongly opposes a financial transaction tax. So it depends on, whose ox gets gored, as Tom Tabak likes to say.
Yeah, this is something that we'll continue to research. Tell us a little bit more about it, Mike. What are the main proposals in the U.S. now?
Well, the International Monetary Fund has done considerable research on this, and the Financial Times has reported that since the G20 summit, they've really, really looked into it. And the major proposals are exactly what you already said, is that if we can get a lot of countries to do it, great. But if right now no one country, especially one major economy, wants to stick its neck out to do this because they're afraid of that, it's too unclear. Same thing in France. It's unclear as to what impact it's going to have. So far, since August, stocks and bonds are trading in France as normal. The speculators have seemed to find a way around it right now, and it's kind of nice to have this. Some of the prime brokers are offering their prime traders a way around it by saying that the traders never actually own the stock and therefore never have to actually pay the tax.
Again, what this is not talking about is some national sales tax or anything. This is a tax strictly focused on the folks who really have the most money in the country, and the sector of the economy that's doing the best that it can afford to be taxed. There have been conservative economists who are concerned about the tax, and a lot of their arguments, what we were talking about earlier, is that what happens when they move the financial transactions from the U.S. to Britain, say. A lot of these other countries they couldn't move it to, but they might be able to do that. Sweden started a kind of mini version of this tax, and then they abolished it in 1990, right?
Yeah, a long time ago, but it's unclear.
That's before real high-speed trading took place. I understand an awful lot of the trading, folks. I don't have the figures before me. An awful lot of it is done in massive, super-quick trades. It's not something that's kind of, well, easy to explain, but they're looking at tiny little differences and multiplying them over millions of times. So tiny little fluctuations in the stock price, when you can trade quick enough, you can make a lot of money. And it's a large percentage now.
Well, even as small as a fifth of a cent, I mean, you're seeing a lot of that. And I think, at least for the United States, when this becomes negotiated in reality, then that may be more the level we're talking about. Right now, we've seen everything from a fifth of a cent to a half a cent, but still it's a fairly...
Percent, right.
Percent. I mean, actually, up to 1%. And like I say, right now, around the Internet, some of this is being laid at Obama's door, that his financial team is recommending this, and of course, the Financial Times says there's... No, I went to fact check, and they say it's just not true, that this is just not an Obama thing. This is a everybody else thing. The G20 talks about it. Treasury secretaries talk about it. Finance ministers are talking about it as a way of shoring up lagging revenues worldwide.
The Center for Economic Policy Research talks about the fact that this is an idea that's beginning to gel. And they compare it to the introduction of the income tax under William Pitt the Younger.
Oh, yeah,
which
there you
a while
go.
Back in 1789. So governments come into power in Great Britain, and they all promise to get rid of the income tax, but then income tax never disappears, no matter who's in power. And the reason is, and I know people don't like income tax, the reason is once you have industrialization and you build up huge populations and complicated infrastructure, you need more money. If everybody's going about a place on dirt roads and there are little farming communities scattered around and you have one or two big cities, which are maybe 30, 40, 50,000 people, yeah, big, then that you need one level of taxation. For our complex culture, we not only have more wealth, but we need to invest more constantly in maintaining the infrastructure of our country.
Well, that's it. The National Nurses Network, I saw a picture of them at a meeting with the little green felt hats. That's where, hence the term Robin Hood tax. I kind of like the name anyway, but they wanted to target one of our biggest problems, one of our biggest drains on the economy, one of the reasons for the Affordable Health Care Act, why it was so important, is that health care costs are devastating, certainly can be devastating to economies. And so controlling those costs and helping those costs become a first priority for any kind of new revenue. And the nurses see this. They see this easily. They see this as a method that the United States could have the kind of health care Fox News says it has. You know, we're 17th in healthcare or something. It's not the, you know, the best in the world. It's especially if you don't have a good health insurance. So
this seems like a painless way or comparatively painless way to raise a whole lot of money that will not directly impact most consumers.
Well, that's the key. We mentioned before the show that average, as you were reading through this stuff, well, the average people aren't going to be affected by this. And that's true.
It's, so if the president gets through the House and the Senate and stops the tax Bush tax cuts on the very, very wealthy, that brings in a little bit of money. We're talking about a tax that'll bring in, what, 20 times as much money.
Well, they're calling it a silver bullet, you know, and everybody's always looking for the panacea, the answer to it. I'm not sure they exist in any endeavor, whether it's finance or government or whatever, but this is a...
To speak critically of it, the thing that would worry me is the fluidity of which these guys can transfer where they're, say, they're doing their trades. That's the issue that I think that conservatives and some liberals have brought up that worry me a little bit about the tax. I understand if all the industrialized countries in the world do it and, you know, we have... I understand there's ways to prevent it, but you need it to be done very, very well. And that's the problem. The only problem I see with it, Mike, really is if people transfer their transactions offshore, just like, you know, Romney has his bank accounts offshore, you know, he can't bring the money back into the U.S. without getting it taxed, but he can spend it over when he's on vacation somewhere, for example.
Well, that's it. I mean, everybody's fond of rehashing the election these days, and I'm going to rehash it in two words. I got two words for you. Cayman Islands. That alone should have eliminated anybody from running for president of a country that he wants to lead. But,
the
technical feasibility is there's a section that I read that I'm not finding, but the technical feasibility is feasible technically.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. The thing, Mike, that I see is you've got a conservative House of Representatives. If this is the best way in the whole world to raise tax money, and it'll be seen as an increase in taxes, even though it's not going to affect most people, not directly anyway, what are the chances of getting it through?
Well, it's because of that. Because I think it's because I think they can justify it to their, they meaning Republicans, can justify it to their constituencies because it affects them. That it is Wall Street helping out Main Street, and that's kind of a nice mantra right now. And I think it has a possibility. I think in this era of when you have House Speaker Boehner talking about at least that revenues have to be increased. I mean, those words actually came out of his lips.
Yeah.
And so this is a way to do that. And I think something in 2012 that has a name, Robin Hood tax, has a great, broad, popular appeal. On both sides of the aisle.
I think this is an idea that I get the feeling when I see it being studied and endorsed by so many people and being studied around the world. It looks like an idea whose time has come. Now, it's not in a set form yet. I guess, you know, when new ideas always take time to percolate, you know, become refined. And so right now we're seeing dozens of different proposals in dozens of different countries, but they're all about the same thing, which is some kind of financial transaction or speculator's tax.
Well, it's going to mean government taking a plunge no matter what and trying it, just like they did in France. Even if it's not perfect, even if you can't predict everything that's going to happen.
It is feasible. I mean, there is a tiny little transaction tax on Wall Street trades now,
right,
that is used to pay for the
Security and Exchange Commission.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, their activities. Yeah, we're just about out of time. We took on a complicated subject. We were going to talk about Benghazi this morning, but I believe in the lies and the half-truths being circulated about that. But certainly it's a political thing, too, another method for attacking the president. And so we may talk about that next time.
We'll bring in a major economist to talk about this, someone who's really deeply experienced. Visit our website, vvid.org. We can always use your contribution, folks. This thing costs us money.
Steve, we're going to make a serious plea for money here, other than for the financial transactions.
I'll see you down on one knee.
We'll be
Mike with your hands in the air.
That'll be our organized approach. Thank you, folks. See you next time.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.